Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst at friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join me on this episode are Mike and Matt. Mike, how you doing?
I am doing well. Just coming off another grueling work schedule slash week. So I'm happy that I got a day off and was able to watch some baseball and kind of do my thing for a change. But I miss you guys. I'm just constantly worrying about Justin and Matt all the time.
And I missed you a lot this weekend. Unfortunately, you were unable to attend Tout Wars with me. Though, don't get me wrong, I had a lot of fun, and it was like really, really cool to see all the people there. But because the party was on Friday night and all the drafts were on Saturday, a lot of people didn't stay out super late. And so it wasn't like quite the party that it was the previous year. So if you were going to miss a year, I think this might be the year to do it. So I think next year we'll be back to being the typical Tout Wars rager self.
Oh, yeah, I'll crash the party no matter what next year. I don't care if I lose my job. It was already grueling enough having to miss it for this season. So, and you can admit, Justin, like, it was not as fun for you because I wasn't there. You don't have to be all, you know, sentimental and sappy about it. It's fine. Like, I get
well,
it.
My wife was there, so I mean, that was
she was
pretty awesome.
I really wanted to see her, like, of everything. Like, that's what I missed the most.
Well, you sound like every single person that was there. Like, they're like, oh, hey, Justin, oh, wait, your wife's here? Awesome. Like, you know, they nobody
push you to the side. Yeah, like, come on over here, Danielle. Like,
nobody wanted anything to do with me. They all wanted to hang out with her. She had a special fantasy wife shirt made up for, which was a huge hit. So, Matt, how are you?
Well, good, man. I'd really like to see. I was listening, catching up on all the Tout Wars stuff this weekend, and sounds like you had a hell of a time, man.
I really did, and this episode's going to be all about Tout Wars and really just my draft, the head-to-head draft that I took place in with guys like Michael Rathburn, Jeff Manns, Clay Link, Stefania Bell, Paul Spores in that one as well. Dr. Roto, who actually wasn't there, but had a proxy drafting for him while he was on his cell phone talking to him.
Nice.
Jake Seeley was there. Howard Bender, Kyle Elfrink, Peter Kreutzer, and Andrew Lamont also in that draft. So we're going to jump right in and just start discussing it. Before we do that, let me kind of just run down a little bit of the format, because the format, I think, is important when we talk about the context of these teams, and especially mine. It is a head-to-head points league. It is no longer head-to-head categories like it's been in previous seasons. Somewhat standard point scoring totals, you know, a point for a single, two for double, three for triple, four for home runs. You get a point for a walk and a run and an RBI. You get 2 points for stolen base, a negative point for caught stealing, negative half points for strikeouts, and that's the offensive point categories. Pitching is where it gets a little interesting. Only 5 points for a win, negative 3 points for a loss, 5 points for a save, negative 3 points for a save, or sorry, for a blown save. A point for a strikeout, a negative point for a walk, or a hit allowed. You get 1 point for an out, which pretty much means 3 points for an inning pitched, and then a negative point for an earned run. So, but then the next interesting part is you don't technically win the week by getting the most amount of points. You get 2 points are awarded to the person who has the most hitting points, 2 points are awarded to the person with the most pitching points, and then 4 points are awarded overall to whoever has the most overall points. So there are a total of 8 points given out each week to the two participating, or to the two people in the matchup. So I'll start with you, Matt. What do you think of the format? Then what everybody's overall strategy was.
Right. First things first, I hate points leagues. I don't really play in them very much, or at all, because I don't like them. So my opinion of points leagues is, they
don't play in them? Okay, solid.
Yeah. No, I was a little bit disappointed that that it was the Tout X, people aren't familiar, rotates different kind of a theme every year, different different.
I don't know that that is the case anymore. I think that's what it was originally.
Stick around, okay.
It feels like this may stick for a while.
Okay, well that's good then, because I think for you specifically, I think this is the only year you're going to be able to do what you did.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you know next year's prices on these guys are going to be crazy. We'll get into that more, but I'm really excited to see how it plays out. And, you know, I was listening to a lot of analysis today on SiriusXM and the on-demand. If you don't have Sirius, you should get it just for the Top War stuff alone. For fantasy baseball, it's
yeah, go get a 30-day free trial right now.
Right, you can, yeah, and listen to on-demand. It's good stuff, but there's a lot of it I didn't agree with, but doesn't have to agree to be good, you know? So it's a crazy format, and I just think we'll touch on this more as we go. I don't think a lot of people understood the format as well as you did.
Yeah, well, why don't we do this? Why don't I just say what my team is?
Right.
And then I'll hand the show over to you guys, and you just ask me questions about the rationale for it, and why I did what I did. So my offense is I got JT Realmuto for $11, Evan Gattis for $6, Brandon Belt for $1, Daniel Murphy for $9, Marcus Semien for $2, Mike Moustakas for $3, Cesar Hernandez for $2, Eugenio Suarez for $5. Kevin Kiermaier for $6, Eduardo Nunez for $4, Bradley Zimmer for $6, Michael Conforto for $2, Mitch Haniger for $1, and Matt Chapman for $1. I spent a total of $59 on my offense. And then I spent $201 on my pitching. I got Max Scherzer and Clayton Kershaw for $54 and $52 respectively. Robbie Ray for $24. Carlos Martinez for $27. Johnny Cueto for $10. Jeff Samardzija for $15. Sonny Gray for $9. Marco Estrada for $5. Dan Schrader for $5. And my reserves are Chris Stratton, Kyle Gibson, Kendrys Morales, Clayton Richard, Josh Harrison, and Felix Hernandez. So I'll throw it over to you, Mike, first, and you can, you know, start, you know, you guys can start peppering me with questions, let's do that.
All right, so on a scale of 1 to 10, I think it's pretty obvious what your strategy was. You wanted to secure at least two of the top four starters that are in the fantasy landscape right now, and you did that. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel like you executed your plan?
I think I did it perfectly. I came in with the idea that I wanted to load up on starting pitching, that I wanted to get at least two of the top four starters, and I actually was, you know, and I got to, you know, the first player thrown out was Mike Trout by Andrew Lamont. He went for around, I think, $48, $49, something like that, and then Max Scherzer was the next player thrown out by me. I got him. The next player was thrown out after that was Clayton Kershaw by Jeff Manns, and I got him as well. I was still in on the bidding of Chris Sale and Corey Kluber. If I had gotten a third one, I would have been totally stoked about that too. I made the decision coming in that I was going to spend $200 on pitching. One, because I felt that the point values were so skewed towards starting pitcher and getting 3 points for an inning pitched. And there were other people in the drafts, and you know, we heard some of them on Sirius as well, talk about how closers should get a bump. And while I agree the top-tier closers get a bump, there's a lot that can go wrong with the bottom-tier closers. And my values had almost every single closer other than the top three pretty much worthless.
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, that was actually going to go into my next question, was there was only a couple of teams that did not draft a closer, and when I just kind of plugged in y'all's settings and put it into my projection system and everything, Kenley Jansen, the top closer in the game, didn't even show up until after starting pitcher 70 on my projection.
Oh, wow. And that's more extreme than mine, because I can bring up my projections. I had, let's see, Kenley Jansen, dun, dun, dun. I had him as the 36th most valuable pitcher. But like, yeah, and we're talking about going after guys like Rick Porcello and J.A. Happ.
Yes, yeah. And like you said, things can go, I mean, 3 points for a blown save is insane.
Well, not only that, but most of the times when you get a blown save, you also get a loss.
Yeah. Runs and runs.
Mm-hmm. And runs and hits. or walks. Right. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
so it just all curtails. So there's a couple of teams here, one in particular that has like four or five closers, which I can see really becoming an issue just from the get go.
Well, and you have an innings minimum for the year, so like you're not going to be able to play all those guys, and you know, saves come in bunches, so there may be weeks in which you know Andrew Lamont is one of the teams I know that drafted a fair amount of closers. Like there are going to be weeks where she just rocks it, and then there are going to be weeks where she gets nothing from her pitching staff. And I think that in a head-to-head league, you need a fair amount of consistency. And I feel like I'm going to get that with my staff. And, you know, part of the strategy is I need to win pitching every week. And I need to get just enough from my offense to allow my pitching to carry me in the overall. So that's the plan. I feel like it is a pretty interesting strategy, but also I think it's the right strategy, obviously, because I employed it. I was surprised, and, you know, I haven't delved super deep into all of the teams. I don't think anybody spent 50% or more of their budget on pitching, and I think that's a mistake.
Yeah.
In this format, I agree. I don't see. And I was, about to ask you, my first question was going to be what your thought process was with punting saves, but we pretty much, you touched on that, and I agree with you 100% on your logic for that. I guess, I was listening to Sirius and they kept saying the same phrase, "There's multiple ways to skin a cat." They kept bringing that up multiple times. And I think in this format, there's really only one. And I think it's the way that you did it. And I like your starting pitching a great deal. I think you have six guys that have a better than a coin flip's chance of pitching 200 innings.
Yeah. I mean, if I had known that virtually everybody in this league would not value pitching like more than hitting. I thought there would be, I thought a third of the league would do like the 65-35, or 70-30 traditional split that you see in a roto league of the auction money versus hitters and pitchers. And then I thought a third would do like a 50-50 split. And then I thought, there's going to be a third of people that are going to do, maybe a reverse, a 65-35 split hitting or over pitching, valuing pitching over hitting. And so to not see anybody really do that kind of threw me a little bit. I actually adjusted my values pretty early on. Because originally I was going to spend $230 on pitching, but I once I saw, one of the things I did was during the Trout bidding, and then the next few hitters that went after Trout is I watched who was bidding, who was making bids after after $30, on these kind of big name guys, and I realized everybody was.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I want to ask you this. So I was listening at the very beginning when after Trout went out or was nominated and everything and he was sold. I heard you bid, kind of getting a little bit of a bidding war of sorts with Paul Spohrer on, I believe it was Scherzer. I think you were the last one at 54, obviously. But do you think that, like, of everything, yes, you executed your plan and everything. Do you think that if you said to yourself, you know what, I'll take one of the top four and then maybe focus a little bit more of my funds on maybe a Verlander or some more, if you ended up spending more on the $20 guys as opposed to having just four guys that are over $24 and then the rest of them being kind of in the middle tier type of starters, did you ever think of maybe setting, I think that you set the market at $50+ for the top four guys. And if you had foregone doing that, you might have been able to sneak in a couple of those $20 guys, but did that cross your mind at all at the beginning?
I mean, it didn't really at the beginning. I got both those guys really early on in the draft process. And at that point, I'm going, okay, maybe people are, because, people were bidding me up to, I spent $54 on Scherzer and $52 on Kershaw. And then Chris Sale goes a little while later and goes for even more, goes for 55. And so it seemed like early on that maybe people were going to just pay up for pitching. If I was to go back and do it over again, you know, maybe I would have, you know, let someone else take Kershaw, and I would have, you know, instead of doing a Kershaw and a Cueto for a total of $64, maybe I go and do, like, you know, I'm just looking randomly.
Nola Severino or something, or yeah, Nola, like, Rom.
Yeah, no, Severino and, you know, Archer at 61 or at 68 was really nice for Sealy. You know, if those were my 2-3,
yeah,
that would be pretty nice, and I would still be able to get, you know, one of Robbie Ray and Carlos Martinez, or even both. You know, I think if I was to redo the strategy, you know, maybe I don't get a Cueto, maybe I don't get a Dan Straley or a Marco Estrada, and I have a bunch of $20 guys, you know, on top of having one of the $50 guys.
You got a question, Matt?
No, I mean,
I can keep rocketing, so.
Yeah, go ahead. I don't play points that much, but I mean, I just...
And I mean, truth be honest, I don't play a ton of points league either.
I just know it was a hard secret to keep, because, I mean, in our staff chat, I mean, this was your plan from the get-go.
Yeah, yes. This wasn't... I think some people were like, well, was this something that Justin, you know, came up with while seeing the prices? Oh. Or no, this was...
No.
We've been working on this...
plan.
Yeah, I mean, I came up with this plan probably about a month ago. I talked to Joe Pisapia, who's a big points league guy. And he said, you know, you should probably do, you know, 100 and, you know, or probably do like a 60-40 split favoring pitching. And I just went, you know what? I think a lot of people are going to do that, not knowing that a lot of people wouldn't. And I think I'm going to really just blow everybody out of the water and really lock down. Because, I mean, part of the strategy not only is to dominate myself, but everybody spending all the money on offense means they're going to split a lot of weeks. You know, there's going to be a ton of weeks where, you know, guys, you know, one person wins pitching, one person wins hitting, you know, and they either split the overall or one wins. And, you know, you're going to see a lot of teams that hover around 500. I don't want to hover around 500. I want to win, you know, 6 points every week. And I felt like this was a strategy that could do that.
Yeah, I mean, and if you go through even my projection systems, like every starting, the top 6 to 7 starting pitchers are valued higher already than Mike Trout himself. And I mean, that kind of leads into my next question with offense. Were you targeting anybody that just kind of limited their strikeouts? And in points formats, you always have guys that if they limit their strikeouts and just kind of get on base, they usually end up doing fairly well. Somebody like Billy Hamilton really gets depressed in a format like this. But were you more or less just looking for value on offense, or were you really kind of targeting guys that did have pretty decent contact skills, except for somebody like Bradley Zimmer, of course?
Bradley Zimmer was a...
I laughed out loud when I saw his
homer pick.
Yeah, it was a total homer pick. He's like, he's not great for the format. I just wanted him.
Like, yeah, right. I mean, I get it.
Like, you know, if you talk to anybody, honestly, everybody makes a mistake at some point in an auction, and I made 2 in this auction, personally. One was Bradley Zimmer. I just wanted him. I wanted him on my team. You know, I'm a huge Bradley Zimmer guy. Anybody who's listened to this podcast over the course of the last 3 years knows how big of a fan I am, that I watched him play in college, that, you know, I've always been higher than the rest of the industry on Bradley Zimmer. So, you know, it was probably not a very smart move, especially considering I also got Michael Conforto later. Who's obviously going to have to hit my DL and be replaced. And so, it's hard for me to use one of my... it's hard for me to put Bradley Zimmer on my bench with the way my team is currently constructed. The other mistake I made was Daniel Murphy. You know, I probably should have not spent the extra dollar or two on Murphy. I did go above my bid or my projections bid limits on him, but one, I just felt like if he comes back healthy, he is a real difference maker in this kind of a format. And it was going to be really hard for me with only having $60 to spend over 14 offensive positions to find those kind of guys. And to get a guy like that at $9, I felt it was worth the upside. And in a 12-team league, I could get away with it.
I actually thought that's one of your best offensive buys.
Yeah, I just worry about, like, when is he actually going to be ready.
Right, the health,
you know,
concerns. Right, because, so, I mean, he's perfect for a points format and the fact that he doesn't strike out very much, and he does have, you know, a decent amount of extra base hits, not just home runs, but he does pile up doubles totals and stuff. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's had 40 or more doubles going back to the last six seasons now. So, I mean, that's really good for this format. Like I said, doesn't strike out. It's just a health concern. But he's going to hit for a nice average if he's healthy. I think he's, you know, him and I'm trying to pull up that sheet real quick. I like him on your offense a lot. And then I left because I know you had to get, you know, Marcus Semien, your other.
Yeah, you went for $2. I mean, like.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't fault that at all. I like those two buys a lot on your offense. And I know you don't like Brandon Belt, and you got Brandon Belt for $1. And I think in this format, he could be a decent.
Well, and that was the thing, like, you know, a lot of these purchases that are $1, $2 purchases were, like, guys when, you know, I'm crossing, every time someone, you know, auction or send someone up for auction, cross them off my list, and I looked at a guy like Brandon Belt that, yeah, he doesn't hit a lot of home runs, and home runs are valuable, but he does hit a fair amount of doubles, and he walks all the time. And that's really important in this format. And he's going to hit in the middle of a Giants lineup that's massively improved. Like, I had Brandon Belt way higher than I would have them valued in a typical roto league. I mean, for just to be, you know, just for comparison, like, Tommy Pham went for $18.
Careful what you say. Yeah.
I love Tommy Pham this year. You know how much I love Tommy Pham. I mean, I don't love him as much as you do. You know, he's your Bradley Zimmer. But I love Tommy Pham this year. I'd spend, you know, close to $30 on him in an NL only, you know, especially in OBP format like that. But in this format, I had him valued about the same as Brandon Belt. And I got Brandon Belt for $1.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't. Did it become apparent to other owners? Like, I wasn't there at the table, and obviously you can't really hear it that well on the radio, like, in terms of the chatter at the actual table. But, like, did people slash owners at the draft itself think that, like, start catching on to your strategy pretty early? Like, wow, he's really going to go all in on pitching, like almost the opposite of a Labadini plan at some point, like, or was everybody just not really adjusting their values, did you feel?
I don't think people realized what I was doing. I mean, I don't know if I had a huge effect on other people's values per se, what I was doing, mostly because everybody was doing the opposite.
I disagree. Okay. I think you did. Listening to the draft, I mean, Chris Sale went for 55 because of your first two buys. And it was pretty quickly right away. I mean, you said Scherzer and Kershaw were the second and third player thrown out. So I think everybody caught on fairly quickly. And then you were involved in the Syndergaard bidding too.
I was involved in virtually every major starting pitcher's bidding. Like, there were, you know, I mean, outside of Bumgarner, who I've been, you know, very much off of this year, I mean, I was in on the Archer bidding. You guys know I'm not a big Archer guy, but you know you're going to get 200 innings from the dude and a ton of strikeouts. Like, okay, you know, the ERA may not be great, but that's kind of meaningless in points leagues. I was in on all. I think that's where, like, my plan had a huge effect. Is I didn't let a lot of the major starting pitchers go cheaply. You know, there was definitely a lull, and I think people got good deals as I started to fill up my pitching staff. But I actually, after I bought, like, my first four or five guys, I wasn't very active. You know, I had to wait because a lot of people threw out offense very early through the first, 2 hours of this draft, and so. And I wasn't going to volunteer to spend my own money, you know, in the middle portions. So I wasn't necessarily throwing out guys that I was in love with. But, like, a lot of guys, I don't think people really realized exactly what I was doing. I know Paul at one point, Paul Spohr, my co-host over at Sleeper in the Bust, when we went head-to-head on Scherzer, he kind of looked at me and he goes, are we doing the same thing? Because he thought we were both doing an extreme Stars and Scrubs, and that was not my not what I was doing. But I was okay letting him, letting him think I was. I didn't say one way or the other. Ultimately, I wanted to spend on starting pitcher, and I wanted to spend a little bit on catcher because the drop off in points at the catcher position in this format is huge.
Drastic, yeah.
I mean, I have like the top, I think 4 or 5 catchers in this format being worth top 30 offensive players or top 40 offensive players. So
yeah, according to mine, you got the number 4 and 5 guys on my projections.
Yeah, I have Real Muto probably a little bit higher than you do. At the end of the day, catcher is actually really important in this format because catchers don't play a whole lot. And so the catchers that do accumulate a ton more points than the catchers that don't. And so that was one of the few spots on offenses I was willing to pay. And I paid $17 for my two catchers combined.
At what point do you think people will try and trade offense to you for pitching, assuming that you're going to want it?
I assume that once people start hearing me on this podcast, I know me and Paul are going to break down our draft tomorrow and maybe some of the other drafts as well. And then I'm going to be on Flags Fly Forever. I've already been on Sirius and Fantasy. I assume once people realize that I was doing or that I don't want balance, I don't think people will be too too trade happy with me. I don't see myself as needing to make trades. I mean, the only thing that I could do, is if Chris Stratton or Kyle Gibson, who I got in the reserve, or if they turn into something. Well, see, that was the thing. Like Clayton Richard, he went in the reserve. I have him ranked really highly.
He almost went 200 innings last year. All the time on head, I think he went like 170.
I believe he did go 200 innings.
Really?
He did.
Mm-hmm. I know I did the player cap for him on Fangraphs, and he went an absurd amount of innings. I was like, I can't even believe that he did this.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, having guys who can go 200 innings is huge. And
yeah,
you know,
5-inning outing is automatic, right? What, 15 points? And that's not – no, even in adding the – yeah, if you go 5 innings in a game – regardless of your stats, you're already getting 15 points. Is that correct?
Yeah. So he went 197 innings last year.
197 and a third.
Mm-hmm. And got 151 strikeouts. So, like, that's not a good strikeout per nine.
Yeah.
And his ERA was crap. But he kept the walks under control. He didn't give up a ton of home runs. So he limited some damage. But the innings are huge. That's, almost 600 points in this format.
Yeah. Yeah, in an age of fantasy where innings really are hard to come by, you're just trying to grab as much as you can. I mean, I think people are going to really catch on quickly. If you had to choose, I mean, you got to participate in Top Awards last year to kind of sub in for Stefania Bell. This was the same table, right, pretty much?
Yeah,
the same.
The only difference was one, Stefania Bell was back and she was drafting, and then Michael Rathburn was new in this league as well. And so those were the only differences as opposed to last year from this format. It was and then obviously Dr. Roto wasn't there. Something happened with his flight and he couldn't make it, and so he had someone sitting in and then he was also like texting him and calling in and stuff like that to kind of guide the guy.
That's a real pain. Did you feel more comfortable this year since you were doing it essentially for the second time?
I felt very comfortable with, doing it. I was very uncomfortable that my strategy wouldn't be well received. And, I mean, you could definitely, once things started coming together and I started, because I was the first person to finish, I believe, my pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
And like once people really started kind of looking down at what I was doing, at one point Rick Wolf a Fantasy Alarm, who's, you know, my boss's boss over there.
Yeah.
He walked in and kind of looked down at my roster and he goes, "What are you doing? like I'm embarrassing the company or something like that."
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's, you know, like, don't get me wrong, for the most part, people like on Sirius, like, they didn't like completely like trash me. Like, there were a couple guys on Sirius and stuff like that and other places that were like, "Well, I don't get this strategy, or this strategy doesn't seem like it's a very good one." You know, but I just don't think people understood the format, and I feel like I actually swindled a lot of these deals. You know, people, you know, were like, "Man, $54 is a lot for Max Scherzer." I would have gone as high as $65-70.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, is I was worried for you just listening to the beginning of it, because, you know, I forgot who was actually broadcasting on Sirius and who the announcers were and everything. But, like, I, you know, we've been, you know, kind of on the lower tier of fantasy scales for a number of years. And, you know, you hit the biggest stage on your team, not filling in for somebody. And, like, you know, I'm sitting here nervous for you about, because I knew what the strategy was going to be. And off the bat, like, you're automatically getting Scherzer and Kershaw. I was like, "Well, it's on now." If he was thinking about doing it before, he's definitely doing it now.
So he's all in now. Like,
yeah, I'm kind of like, man, I hope Justin just makes it. I hope he makes it through without, like, you know, because ultimately, there are going to be people that don't understand. I mean, the people in the draft, I'm going to be, you know, frank, like, the people in the draft don't understand fully what the format is. So let alone people that are analyzing it from afar and not really factoring in the actual point structure and everything. But, yeah, I think you did it. I think you executed your plan really well. And I think people are kind of going to kind of look at you at the end of the season and be like, "Wow, we kind of got, a little bit kind of fleeced here by this guy." So,
I mean, I hope that's what happens. Like, you know, Todd Zola, you know, was on the Tout Wars Hour with me and Laura. He usually comes on and does a segment or two, but he did the whole show with us on Sunday because we were in the studio in New York, you know, and he really thought highly of my teams. Now he's backtracked a little bit. You know, he didn't take into account that there are, you know, 14 hitters and 9 pitchers. And so maybe I shouldn't have gone, you know, maybe it would have been smarter for me to go a little bit more on the hitting side than I did. But I feel like it's actually a little bit safer for me to have gone so extreme as opposed to, you know, maybe doing like a, you know, 60-40 type split towards pitching. Because, like, if you lose a big pitcher, like, let's say I had, you know, I had only done either Scherzer or Kershaw, and I put the other one's money into my hitting. If I lose that one pitcher, I'm pretty screwed.
Yes.
You know, then the strategy completely falls apart. I can now, you know, afford to lose one of those guys. You know, it would suck, and I don't want to have it happen. I'm hoping this is a year where Kershaw throws 180, 190, 200 innings. But if I do lose one of them for, you know, 40 or 50 innings of their total production, I can survive it because I have so much depth at the pitching positions.
Yeah, I mean, and if you are going offense heavy in this format, then what you want to do is get the big home run guys that hopefully don't strike out much, but every big home run guy does at some point or one or the other. And then you also want to get maybe high contact batting average assets that are able to score a lot of runs because they're on good teams. And, you know, quite frankly, in all of baseball, there isn't that many good offensive teams, and not necessarily one that's better than the pack or whatever. I mean, unless you're talking about the Astros and Yankees and stuff like that. But overall, like, offense in every points league that I've ever been in is constructed of a lot of guys that are either power based or just run scoring assets that can get on base. So the fact that you're probably able to fill in on offense pretty easily makes for a good season for you. I mean, I don't, you know, like I asked you earlier, like, how well do you feel like you executed your plan? You said perfectly, and I agree. I mean, I don't really think that there's another way that you could have really swapped things up other than maybe trying to make the market a little bit kind of softer on the top four starters. But I think, you know, if say Spore ended up with Scherzer at $53, what do you think you would have got Kershaw at anyways? I think you would have ended up getting him at about the same cost, and then you would have went all in on Sale, and it might end up being to your detriment, really.
Yeah, so. I still think that Sale would have gone for, you know, 52 to 55. I think part of the reason Sale went for so much is people went, well, now I need to get this one or the next one, and I don't want to be in the bidding war for the last guy. Because like the one thing like people don't realize in an auction, you know, if you're not much of an auction guy, is like you like buying the first guy that comes up in a tier is not a bad thing. One, it sets the market. And two, you know, there may be a bidding war for that last guy in a tier. You know, and sometimes it doesn't work out. You know, I could have bought Scherzer at $54 and Kershaw at $52 and then saw Sale and Kluber go for like $45 apiece. You know, I'm glad that's not what happened. I'm glad they both went for over $50. But I have those as my top two pitchers in fantasy this year and top two pitchers in this format. And I got them both, you know, for, you know, less than the guy that went third.
Yeah. Oh, man. I got to say this, like, so somebody that's just looking at or analyzing the draft from their computer, what's the biggest difference for somebody doing an auction on their, you know, on ESPN or whatever site that they go on via or against going to Top Wars and facing some of the best in the industry? What's the biggest difference when people are like kind of analyzing on Twitter what you're doing?
I mean, you know, auction dynamics are always a play. Like, so like, you know, some people are going to go back and you hear it all the time. You know, you'll hear it on your podcast. You're going to see it on Twitter. You're going to hear it on the radio. People are going to go back and like, well, I would rather have the $16 Dallas Keuchel and the, you know, $16 David Price than the $54 Scherzer. Well, yeah, if I had known those guys were going to go for $16,
yeah, then I would have chose that.
You know, then right. Yeah, I would have, you know, not spent $9 on Sonny Gray or $10 on Johnny Cueto, like, you know, and I would have gone for those guys, you know. And I was in, like, I don't like Keuchel, and I don't think Keuchel's a particularly good person for this format anyways, considering you pretty much know you're not going to get 200 innings from the dude, and he doesn't strike guys out. So, like, you know, you're pretty much hoping he's going to just get a ton of wins to kind of, you know, keep his value. But, yeah, you know, obviously hindsight's 20/20, and, you know, I'd already spent $106 on pitching after my first two purchases. Like, you know, I'm kind of stuck with what I've got, and, you know, and I can't really venture into the $37, you know, Luis Severinos of the world. So, you know, and I don't think people realize how fast it goes.
Yeah, it's really fast. Like, when I went last year, I was actually really kind of shocked by how fast it really does go. And that's in every auction. It's not just in one or the other.
And you can, like, go on, like, if you go listen back to the Tout Wars coverage, there are a couple times throughout the coverage where they play, like, live auctioneering. Like, you can hear me buy both Scherzer and Kershaw. They played, had that on live on the radio. And you can just see, like, there is no, like, you know, okay, like, you know, hey, give me a second. You know, no, like, if you ask for a second, people are going to laugh at you. And there were times where people, like, did ask for a second, and the whole room, like, either laughed or groaned. And that was just, like, when people were, like, looking for someone to throw out. Like, you need to be on your game and completely prepared. I got there at 10 a.m. for a 4 p.m. draft to make sure I was ready to go.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Also to watch the other drafts. So,
well, sure. Yeah, is there one or two particular owners that are worrisome for you in this format, or are you just kind of saying like I'm in my own boat and I could either be at the opposite scale and everybody else is kind of competing, or I'm just going to be the lone winner?
I mean, there's part of me that wants to say that like this is a done deal and I've got this shit wrapped up. Yeah, that's obviously not the case. You know, there are other, you know, there's some really good owners in this league, and there's some really good teams. And all it's going to take me is, you know, if I have like 4 or 5 bad weeks, you know, where my pitching like all takes a shit at once, I'm really screwed. Like there, like I love this strategy and I think it's the correct strategy. Like I said, you know, maybe it's extreme, but because it's so extreme, like there's very little room or margin for error. Whereas like Jake Seeley and Paul Spohr both put together really good, more balanced teams. You know, Clay Link, another one, you know, put together some good balanced teams, that have a lot less room for error.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, do you think that there's a chance you get kicked out if you come in dead last by a far of margin, like a wide margin?
No, I mean, like,
I'm just kidding with you. I'm kidding. It's a joke.
I think, like, you know, because let's be honest, like, this is ultimately, it's a head to head league. There's no playoffs, which is nice. If there were playoffs, you know, this would be a completely different story because obviously, you know, you could see guys like Scherzer and Kershaw, like, being sat during the playoffs. Absolutely. Or, you know, having start skipped and stuff like that. I'm hoping by the time we get to September, I've got this thing wrapped up. You know, I probably won't, but that would be, you know, the dream would be to be far enough ahead where, like, I can make sure that I'm, you know, just, you know, doing enough not to cough up the, you know, a championship or anything like that. You know, and I won't have to worry about guys, you know, getting skipped or doing abbreviated starts at the end of the season. You know, there isn't a ton of room for error where I think other teams maybe have that. I'm interested to kind of see how, if other people adjust their strategy in season. So if we start seeing big trades for pitching from some teams to kind of shift the balance towards a more pitching heavy approach, because I just ran the numbers and like I said, I haven't delved like super deep into it, but nobody else even spent 50% of their budget on pitching. Yeah. Clay Link did a very balanced. He spent $134 on hitting, $126 on pitching. But then, I mean, everybody else for the most part spent at least $134 on hitting. And I mean, some people spent, you know, over $150, $160, $170 bucks on their hitting.
Is this the most prep time you've ever spent for one draft ever?
No, definitely not.
Okay. I didn't feel like it was.
There's
a lot going into it, so
I mean, at the end of the day, it's a points league, so like. A points league, like, don't get me wrong, like, did I spend more time on this particular strategy and the prep than I have on any other points league? For sure.
Sure.
You know, but ultimately, like, you get your points projections, you run them through, you know, whatever software, whatever, you know, program you're using, you know, to kind of get replacement values and positional values and things like that. And then you've got your numbers. Like, it should, like, tell you, spit out and go, this is exactly what everybody's worth, considering these are your projections, and that's what I did. And at the end of it, I was like, okay, this is what I'm going with. I'm going to trust the numbers that I've come up with through my projections and through you know, through the program that I ran them through. So, you know, I had one packet of all the pitchers. I had one packet of all the hitters. I had my computer just to keep track of my team and how much money I was spending on hitting and pitching, and that was it. I mean, comparatively speaking to like a roto league, no. I mean, I would have put probably, you know, 30%, 40% more time if this was tout AL or tout NL or tout mixed, because, you know, there's a lot more strategy, I think, to those, you know. And I don't, you know, for a head-to-head points league, I don't have to worry about what other people are doing. Like, I really didn't care how people were constructing their team, because it's all about points.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're more worried about executing your own plan.
Yeah.
I will say this. Does anybody in the league, other than Paul Spohr, because you continually work with him, does anybody in the league know how good of an in-season manager you are? Because, you know, if you had one thing to do in-season right now, like, what would that focus be?
I mean, Howard Bender does, because Howard and I have played in the Barf League for the last couple of years. You know, so he definitely does. I don't know. I've played in leagues with Andrew Lamont before, but they were AL only. So, like, I, you know, obviously there's not a ton of in-season work that, you know, needs to be done outside of, you know, playing the trade deadline and, you know, just picking up guys when guys get hurt and things like that. I mean, AL only so deep. Your draft is really important. So yeah. I don't think people realize, you know, how I kind of play a game in season. I know Jake Seeley is a big trader. You know, actually, I just got access to my team today on Roto, which is the site that hosts all. And there was still like a trade proposal from last year to Michael Beller on there from Jake Seeley. And I believe he's been responsible for like 75% of the trades that have happened in this league. So me and Jake are already buddies, but we're definitely going to become a little bit closer, you know, as we need to start making trades and stuff like that. So, but yeah, I mean, I feel like this is a format that I can excel at. You know, like I said, I've never been a big points league guy, largely because I just prefer Roto, and then I hate the playoff systems in baseball. But I kind of like that there's no playoff system here.
Who yeah, is the? Oh, go ahead, Mike.
No, I'm good. Go ahead.
Who is the? This is kind of a softball question for you, but who is the hardest player? I guess one on offense and one on defense to, or one on pitching side, to sit back and just watch everyone else bid on and knowing you had to stick to your strategy, stick to your plan.
Oh, like so, like a guy that maybe
that you wanted, but you knew you couldn't. You know, buy or else it would blow up your strategy.
Oh, man. There are a lot of offensive buys that were really hard. You know, that, like, if I was doing a more balanced approach or something like that, I mean, I would have gotten in on the Lindor purchases or, you know, even Harper, even though I'm not a big Harper guy, like, seeing him go for what he went for in this format, even Trout, like, to me, like, Trout was, you know, actually somewhat of a bargain at $48. Like, I like that buy.
Right. And with the prices that pitching went, I mean, you're looking at guy Ryan Braun for $5.
Yeah.
Cespedes for $7. Mm-hmm. Like, with the price of pitching, it's got to pull it from somewhere. So there's plenty of offensive players going. Yeah.
If I could,
it's crazy.
If like I could have had a second team. Like, if I could have drafted two teams, I would have loved to put together a team of, like, all $10 players. Like, because, like, Gregor Polanco went for $6.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm like, yeah. I just, there's no way. That would have been my Zimmer.
Like, and, you know, one of the reasons why I love, Miguel Cabrera went for $8. Like, $8, you know, and these are both from Paul Spora's team. Like, you know, like, and that's one of the reasons, like, when Paul and I talk, like, you know, I'm definitely going to give him some, you know, shit because I feel like he spent way too much money on hitting and not enough money on pitching. But he also got some really good deals in the pitching. Like, Michael Wacha and Michael Fulmer and Mike Clevinger. All for $6 a piece.
And Mike Leake for a dollar.
Mike Leake for a dollar. Yeah, I mean, like, you get innings from Mike Leake.
You do.
You know? Yeah. I loved his picks of Aaron Hicks and Tim Beckham in the reserves. I actually tried to take Tim Beckham right after he did, not realizing he had already taken him. You know? So, I mean, like especially in the pitching side, too, those were the ones that hurt. Like, when I went, I would love to have... you know, Lance Lynn went for $5 to Howard Bender. Chase Anderson went to $6, to Howard Bender. You know, I hate Cole Hamels, and I don't think he's going to be very good this year, but $3 for Cole Hamels to Kyle Elfrink, yeah. A guy who's going to pitch 200 innings. They're going to be a shitty 200 innings.
They're going to be better than you think.
No, they're going to be shitty. But they're still 200 innings. Like, that's worth 600 points, those innings. Like, you know you're going to get 600 points. You know, I went all the way to $21 on Zach Greinke with Andrew Lamont. You know, I just, like, like I, if it wasn't for the fact that he's had some real velocity issues this spring, I would have probably gone with him. You know, Aaron Sanchez and Zach Godley went for $6 and $11 and $12 to Stefania Bell, who actually put together a sneaky decent team. But like I at the point that a lot of these guys came out, like I already had, you know, seven pitchers.
Yeah, you can't really go much higher than that.
You know, and there were guys that like I knew I could get for really cheap in, you know, people don't like Marco Estrada, but look at Marco Estrada's like workload over the course of the last 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean Marco Estrada has thrown for 176 innings at least over the course of the last three seasons. He, you know, over the course of the last 2 years, he struck out 165 and 176. That's like hugely valuable in this format.
Absolutely.
You know, and I mean, to get him for $5, you know, and then Dan Straley, another guy. Like, you know, Dan Straley, he's by no means a stud, but like in this format, he has a ton of value. You know, last year, threw for 181 innings, the year before, 191 innings. You know he's going to get you 160 to 170 strikeouts. That's a lot of points in this format. And the fact that he is, like, the top pitcher on the Marlins means he's not going to get skipped.
Yeah, there's no way.
Right.
I can't believe you let Jake Seeley get Joe Musgrove for $2. That's messed up.
Again, like, another guy that, like, he went after. I was hoping to get Musgrove in the reserve.
Yeah.
You know? He went after, I think I was full.
Yeah, I love Musgrove. Yeah, I think he's going to be amazing this
so,
year.
If I could do it over again with a completely different strategy, because obviously I like the strategy I went in with and I want to see how it plays out, but like if I had to redo it and I wasn't allowed to do my strategy, that's a strategy I would take. I would have built a team of a ton of $10, $20 players on the bargains of everybody else, because there were a ton of them out there.
Yeah, and what I love is, I mean, we had Ron Chandler on a couple years ago, and he pretty much talked about expert drafts and what his strategies are going into those drafts, and he uses it as just like kind of an exploratory forum for him to try and, you know, experiment with how rosters are going to shake out against the best competition out there. And I think that, you know, you are experimenting in some ways, but this is, I think, the soundest strategy to go with. I think it's all going to work out. I don't really have any more questions for you. I mean, we really kind of dove into every single aspect of your team and everything. But like, I wish you luck, man. I think you're going to do well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want people to think like I did this to get attention.
No,
because that
you planned this.
No, oh, no. This wasn't like a show me kind of strategy. Or look at me kind of strategy.
Yeah, to get on the map or whatever, new guy in Cal Wars.
Yeah, this
know,
was
hey, this is me.
I honestly thought most people would go with a somewhat of a similar strategy, maybe not as extreme, but I thought this would be fairly standard. You know, it was
that's
actually
part of the reason you wanted to be extreme, right? Was because you thought everybody would at some point be heavy on pitching.
Mm-hmm. And people were early on. You know, people, you know, you look at the pitching prices for the top guys, it's in the middle rounds, in the middle tiers, that people were a lot more cautious.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Mike, why don't you tell people what you're working on and where you can reach?
Yeah, reach me on Twitter at Mike Warner, FWFB. I will continue writing for Baseball HQ this year for the daily matchups column. I don't know what day of the week yet, but definitely going to be doing that. I also will be writing for Fangraphs this year, which is awesome.
So,
yeah, yeah. So if you didn't see that on Twitter, yeah, I'm doing that. And yeah, so check all that out.
Matt, what are you doing? What can you where can you be reached?
MD Temp FWFB on Twitter, doing all the same stuff. Hit me up for baseball talk, prospect talk, it's that type of season. Got some top 100 lists coming out. So, yeah, check it out.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friends of fantasy benefits, at gmail.com. Yeah, you can read all my stuff at Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarm, Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Fantrax. You can follow me or you can listen to me on the radio on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. on the Sleeper in the Bus podcast with Paul Spohr and Jason Collette on the podcast here. And is that everything I do? I don't know.
I don't know anymore.
Like I literally got home at 5 o'clock in the morning today. So it's now 8 p.m. and I got to be at work at midnight. So it's one of those things where usually I like to give myself an extra day of rest before.
Yeah.
But no rest for the wicked. I'm getting right back to it, and I got a ton of stuff to write because, I got to write up this whole experience, and then we start actual games here in what, like, 2 weeks? They're going to be real baseball games in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Poor Ronald Acuna.
Yep.
He was never coming up, like, immediately.
Oh, I know.
I don't understand this. No. I really don't. I don't get it.
Trust me, I know he wasn't.
All right. Ronald Acuna got sent down. We'll finish off with this. Matt, what date? Pick a date that he comes up. Pick the exact date.
April 13th.
Well, all right. Mike, pick your date.
I'm going to go way more extreme than that, and I'm going to say June 8th.
Oh, I'm going...
Oh, cool. You're no fun.
I'm going to go July 22nd.
Thank you. Somebody's on my side. My gosh.
Hey, what in the world?
All right.
Well, could be worse. You could be Major League Baseball going to the Congress to stop minor league players from making over $10,000 a year, so...
That's criminal. I think we all can agree on that, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, that's going to wrap us up. For Mike, Matt, myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.